Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 414 of the Roguecast, recorded May 2nd, 2023. Caesar Flickerman versus Cole Trickle. We're back after a week off. I was in Reno, Nevada for Game Trade Association thing.
Sounds more like hooker stuff.
I will talk about later. No.
By the way, everybody, this is going to be a PG-13 to R podcast today.
Oh, no.
Isn't that what we always are?
Yeah, yes, but this time much. I warned them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Randy is full of extra pep from Reno. No, you were at a gaming convention. They covered board games and role-playing games stuff, too.
Yeah, board games and role-playing games stuff, too. I'll talk about a little bit in the topics if we get a chance, which we might not, because lots of news, lots of comics for Comic Book Day coming. Yep.
But you did say you saw some very cool-looking stuff coming
up. I did. So, yeah, Free Comic Book Day is this Saturday.
That's our big thing.
11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Yes.
Come out, get, like, 10 comics apiece.
One of our biggest giveaways that we've done.
Yep. If you're a podcast listener, you can slip you a few extra. If you like, you're like, oh, but there's these other two I want. And you're like, you can just take those other two.
Oh, but we're going to just look the other way?
Well, let's look the other way.
Do they have to, like, say they're a podcast listener?
Yes.
All right.
But yeah, come on out. There's a big selection of stuff. Not just from this year. We always have previous year stuff.
Yep.
So there will be a wide selection of comics to read. We will have given a little sampling of it, and we'll be able to tell you sort of, like, what we think are the best stuff for you.
Yep.
Game-wise this week, not a lot of new stuff, but we did get the Azul Mini, which is pretty cool. It's like a travel version of the Azul game.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
And we got the other side of things. We got the Marvel Zombies Zombicide, which is a giant box.
It comes with like 85 miniatures.
It's so many minis.
Is it a starter game, or do you have to have Zombicide?
No, it's a standalone game.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a Kickstarter.
It was Kickstarted. The Kickstarter had everything, including up to a big old zombie Galactus.
Which is really cool.
Which I did see a painted version of a Gamma, and it was cool to sell.
Yeah.
We don't have the zombie Galactus.
We do not have zombie Galactus. It was a Kickstarter-only thing. But we do have the base game. And I'm sure a lot of that stuff, a lot of the add-ons will probably come eventually as expansions. There's a whole X-Men thing.
Yeah.
They will do those. Zombicide stuff. But the Kickstarter stuff always goes first. In fact, this has probably been out for a little while. But if you waited and you wanted to try out the Marvel Zombies Zombicide and you don't want to pay, say, $1,000 for the crazy Kickstarter, you can get this starter, which has, as Nick says, like 85 minis, a whole bunch of Marvel characters. They're all very paintable. I've seen them painted. They're really nice.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of like zombie versions of them, regular versions of them.
Yeah, because you're fighting the regular versions or fighting the zombie versions.
Do people know that Marvel Zombies came from like a sort of cheeky a term I think Stan Lee came up with just to describe how devoted Marvel's fans were?
I don't think they do.
Yeah, he called them
I the bet some Marvel of them Zombies. Do.
Yeah, I'm sure some of our listeners do, but if you didn't, now you know. And now if you don't know, now you know.
If you don't know, now you know. Want to mention we also have other summer events coming up. It's not our event, but Greater Austin Comic Con is happening in June, and we've got tickets for sale. We will have free comics. We will have free tickets for kids on for Comic Book Day. So if you come in, if you got 12 and under, I think, you can ask for tickets for the Greater Austin Comic Con, and we will just give you those.
Yeah.
In fact, we'll be at the front of the line, handing them out anyway. Be like, hey, you got any kids with you? You want some tickets to Free Comic Con? Here you go. Take them.
There's just some kid at CC's, you get pizza, you just want to grab for purposes of this.
Right.
Get them to get the tickets, then get the tickets to you. Whatever you need to do to make it happen.
Once Free Comic Day is over, we will have Free RPG Day on June 24th. Have a big selection of free RPG stuff. There's some good stuff this year. And then we are doing our first official Board Game Day on July 15th, where we will teach a variety of board games. We'll probably do a board game sale. Staffer John and I are going to go through and select games and teach games, that kind of thing. So
then you will unleash them.
Then we'll unleash them. All right, let's talk about comics for April 26th, which is last week, and May 3rd, which is this week. Last week, there's a few. We'll tackle those really quickly. So let's talk about Green Arrow.
Okay.
That is one of DC's launches there, Dawn of DC. Probably, was that last week?
It was.
Last week, yep.
And who's our creative team on this one?
Joshua Williamson and I can't pronounce the artist.
Joshua Williamson.
It looks like
Izosuke. Okay. Sean
Izosuke. Joshua Williamson, who previously had a long run on The Flash.
Yep.
We liked his Rogues Black Label book that he did recently pretty well.
Also, you know, Birthright, Ghosted, a bunch of indie books that he has done over the years.
And Randy, what happens in Green Arrow?
So people keep losing. They keep losing Ollie. He keeps disappearing. In fact, they open with him being like, "How does this keep happening to me?" But instead of being instead of being washed up on the shore of a desert island, he is now in like a crazy space island.
Yes,
We don't know what happened.
He's off world somewhere.
But Team Arrow, which is made up of Connor Hawke, Roy Harper, his son and adoptive son, respectively, and Black Canary, his on-again, off-again wife/girlfriend. I don't know their status quo anymore.
Yeah.
They are looking for him. And looking for him, they run across another character with ties to them, which I thought was interesting. And then suddenly half of them are with Ollie, and the other half are going to be on Earth. And it looks like a big, like, Team Arrow book.
Yeah, and by the way, although Ollie is off-screen for a decent amount of the book, he's narrating it, right?
Yeah, he is
narrating.
So you're getting his thoughts on his son, Roy Harper, his other son, Connor Hawke, Black Canary, what he thinks about her, all of this. And I do think that's some of the strengths of the book, is that really that family vibe. It's sort of what they've been doing in Superman, too. It's clearly kind of part of the overall DC movement right now, is to the family of the characters. Yep.
What's interesting is I see on the back cover some characters who are not in this, but I bet will show up. I saw I see Arrowette, I think.
Yep.
Not Arrowette. It's Mia. So the Kevin Smith's introduces Speedy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I see Onomatopoeia back there. I see Peacemaker. I see Brick. So I love all these Count Vertigo. I don't know if all these people are going to show up, or if this is just a sort of a best of the Green Arrow, but
solid chance that any of them might, though, because they clearly are diving into the history.
I like this redesign of Count Vertigo, though.
It is good.
It's cool looking.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of this. Green Arrow is one of my favorite characters. He has been kind of on the shelf for a little bit. They did an Aquaman Green Arrow miniseries, but they have not had a Green Arrow ongoing for a while now. And while this is a unusual take on it, I'm curious to see where they go.
Yeah. I agree.
Marvel last week, their big thing was Darth Vader, Black, White, and Red. This is another one of their anthology series.
Yeah.
This has a story by Jason Aaron and Leonard Kirk, A.P. Shimoko, and Torin Grunbuch and Klaus Janson.
Yeah, more than anything, these are artistic showcases. Yeah. It's a chance to let some artists, their style breathe. And the Black, White, and Red thing has been a thematic for... What have all we seen?
Wolverine, Deadpool, yeah. Elektra.
Yep.
And I honestly... The Peach Momoko story in here, which is sort of a nightmare that Leia is having, is really, really cool.
Nice.
I like the artwork a lot.
Indie hit Money Shot comes again, is what it's called.
whenever there's a new one of these, I always enjoy making the sign for it, just to explain what it is. It's just so I can remind people that, yes, this is a tale of a somewhat near future Earth, wherein to fund their experiments into space... on a planet that's gotten too dumb to fund science, scientists have to make porn.
Yep.
That is the premise.
With aliens.
With aliens, yes.
That's how they make porn with aliens, that's how they get funding for their space stuff. This is a naughty comic.
It's a naughty comic?
There's nudity, there's sex. There is a surprising guest star from Porno Comics.
Yes.
It turns up at the end, which was kind of a... throwback
to the 80s, I believe, when this character was created. If you know your secret lewd history of comics,
you might be able to guess.
What's that?
You might be able to guess.
Yeah, might be able to. the book is like comedic, but it's actually got a little bit of heart, pretty much always too. Yeah. It is actually very sex positive. It's not. This is there's lots of naughty jokes and things like that. But there's like some actual relationship stuff in here always, and sexy time thoughts. So
It's written by Tim Seeley, who is always pretty good.
Is he still co-writing it with somebody? There's a lady he was co-writing it with.
He's just writing. Well, Giselle Lagasse is the artist and maybe the co-writer.
Okay.
Oh no, Sarah Beatty and Rebecca Isaacs are listed as creators, but they are not working on this
part. Okay, just not on this particular special or miniseries.
Image had a book called Deep Cuts, which is a...
It's a jazz story. I haven't read it. Yes, it is sort of multi-generational, and I think it's meant to show how the sort of tapestry of like artistic influence from one era will kind of trickle and flow through to subsequent generations.
It starts in 1917 New Orleans.
Yep, that's probably seems like a good place for a jazz story.
Yeah. It's very pretty too.
I've been meaning to read it. I just haven't gotten around to it.
This is the kind of thing like manga does well. They do different stories besides in different genres. This is to do just a story about music is a kind of a cool thing. It's about Kyle Higgins, who did Radiant Black and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to this week's thing, and I think the big one is Dawn of DC's Shazam. This is pretty notable because it has Mark Waid and Dan Mora. It's a good creative team.
So were these
right? They had previously been working on
World's Finest, right?
World's Finest.
Yep.
Dan Mora, if you remember, we like couldn't stop gushing about him when he did the Claws series with Grant Morrison for several years. He did a new miniseries on it, but he proved very adept at switching over to superhero stuff, which I was not sure he would do. But he like clearly is really good with kind of iconic DC heroes. And I imagine is going to kind of become one of their big artists, or continue to be.
Yeah, he's been in covers for a while now. Anyway, this is sort of slightly reimagining Captain Marvel. He has been the Geoff Johns, you know, introduced a bunch of family and that kind of stuff.
And that didn't get well. It's their powers aren't working right now.
Right,
currently the story still happens.
Yeah, during Lazarus Planet that just finished up.
Oh, right,
something affected magic and. It's just Billy who has the ability to become Shazam. Right. He can't share the name.
You don't even have read Lazarus Planet. No. None of us have. And I think this is still...
He has the ability.
But somehow Mary Marvel still can turn
into Mary Marvel figured out some other way. But Freddy comes to him and is like, hey, I really want my powers back so I don't have to walk around like this.
I want to say that I feel like Mark Waid has a good feel for Billy. I mean, the opening page has Billy riding a dinosaur
and
very excited to be about being a superhero.
It's kind of a fun. It's not just dinosaurs. It's not like time traveling. There's some twists to it, which is kind of fun. Yeah.
He also talks about how like things like the wisdom of Solomon work. He's largely, you know, still a kid in Superman's body, right? That basic premise continues, but they came up with a neat idea about it.
That's the thing I think that this does really well is that Shazam can be just a second-run Superman.
Right.
In fact, that's how he was created, basically. I think Waid goes out of his way to basically show, here's how he is different from Superman.
And also the difference in being him being Shazam and also him being Billy.
And why he would ever be Billy when he could be Shazam.
Right, and I thought Wade's idea behind that was really cool.
There's some neat little ideas in here. And also, art's great throughout.
Yeah. Right, it uses the lore. I believe he is in Fawcett City.
Yep.
You're going to see Mr. Tawny.
Tawny.
I thought this was a really good first issue. I like this a lot.
I did too.
I am looking forward to more of this.
Talk about the book that we all came out of nowhere.
So DC has a book this week called Peacemaker Tries Hard. It is written by Kyle Starks, art by Steve Pugh, and I think while we've all liked stuff from these guys in the past, we probably all say this is the best work either of them have done.
Well, you like I Hate This Place, right?
Which is I like this better.
Okay.
If you've seen HBO Max's Peacemaker,
yes,
this is very much the comic book version of it.
Or I would imagine if you kind of like the sort of raunchy superhero humor of like The Boys or Deadpool, you're going to probably want to check this out.
That is the Peacemaker show.
But the thing is, Dave, you and I both hate Deadpool and The Boys, and we both like this.
I'm pitching it to other people who aren't me.
I know, but I want to pitch it to people who are us as well. I want to say that whether you like The Boys and Deadpool, or whether you hate them, I think
that's
like
true. It is notable that I liked it, and I am not what you call a huge Deadpool fan.
That is my point.
I am what you maybe call a Deadpool hater, even. But so, yes, there's a pretty simple premise to this that gets it rolling, which is that Peacemaker, who you will know is the kind of like, oh, what is he, fascist-y, patriotic hero?
He was raised by a white supremacist dad.
Yes, who does seem to sometimes have the ability to be more than that.
Yes.
But that is what's baked into him.
At his heart, he wants to be a good guy.
Right.
But he was raised by a terrible person.
He's got a lot of trauma.
And he is a guy who thinks that he thinks that causing peace by violence is a good idea.
Right.
He will do anything for peace.
Even murder.
Even murder.
And so in this, you know, he's been associated with the Suicide Squad and this as the launch premise, it's like he's served his time and they've cut him loose. But Amanda Waller is like, hey, there's some terrorists not too far from you. I figured you probably want to still do this. And that sets off a chain of dominoes, which... I'm going to say violent dominoes.
Yes.
Yes.
And it is this issue is hysterical.
It's really funny.
I'll say the Suicide Squad cameo in this cracked me great. Up.
Yeah, also, I'm gonna say what sort of what it is.
Yeah.
When Waller's got him on the phone, well, what is he wanting to do? He wants
well,
them to hang out.
He's doing a party.
He's doing a party.
He just bought an instant cake mix.
Right. His trip to the grocery store is hilarious. He's in full costume.
Yes.
And anyway. He tells Waller to invite the rest of the squad, and they're all in the room with her, listening to her do it, and they're all like, no, don't do it, don't do it.
Tell them we're busy.
And, the actual writer on it is hilarious. He also wrecks terrorists in this. He finds a new friend who I'm not going to say who it is. Yeah. I think that's kind of fun.
There's a parole officer that is hilarious.
Yes.
The villain they're using is a Doom Patrol villain, I think.
Yep, I liked that villain in this story.
So where this goes a little differently than what the show is, it feels a little more ingrained in the DC universe a bit.
Yeah.
There's a definitely a bunch more nods than what we got, even though he did make fun of, like, Aquaman and Superman and all the other stuff in the show. This feels like John Cena. Feels like...
I think it's drawn to look like him.
I mean, it is. I mean, it's the outfit. I will say, my one knock against it, no Eagly.
There is no Eagly, but there is a replacement for him, so...
I know. I'm just saying.
Yep.
I was sad that there was no Eagly.
Nick takes off at one star.
I do.
So, there's just a... There is a on page 3 of this. While he's in the grocery store, the checkout girl asks him, "What's your deal? Do you shoot laser beams or turn to a fishman or something?" And he says, "My deal is I'd do anything for peace. I'd even kill for it." To which a bystander says, "Would you eat a spoonful of poop for peace?"
And he says,
"I'm not sure how eating something would contribute to peace, but yes, I would. I would do anything for peace. I'd eat a bucket of poop."
Yes.
This was the delight. It was so fun.
Also, I should say, it's actually drawn in this kind of hyper-realistic style.
Which really works for it.
That looks really good. Yeah. I think part of what I was telling you, Randy, I think part of why I like Peacemaker over, say, Deadpool is that Deadpool, his whole personality is kind of, I'm wacky.
Yeah.
And Peacemaker is kind of a straight man.
He's
usually not in on the joke.
Yeah.
And that to me is particularly funny. I don't know.
Marvel
but
has...
That was my favorite book of the week, I think.
I think it might be mine, too. Marvel has Groot Number 1 by Dan Abnett. Abnett and Lanning famously were the ones who basically created the modern Guardians.
Yep.
He's the one who definitely gave us the I Am Groot version of Groot. And this is a fun flashback story to Groot as a youngster.
Young sapling.
And his run-in with a young private named Mar-Vell.
Yeah, so for people who... If you know the MCU version only, you may not know this lore, but like longtime Marvel readers know that the original Captain Marvel was a dude. He was Captain Mar-Vell of the Kree. Famously died in the 80s in Marvel's first graphic novel.
Yep.
But this is a story of him when he was a young buck in the Kree like special ops or military or whatever.
The Star Force did.
The Star Force. And their mission takes them to Groot's Planet X,
mm-hmm.
where there's, like, some bad guys who are, like, clear-cutting it. They're, like, burning away the surface and stuff.
Yeah, there's something that's been, like, destroying planets on the edge of the Kree Empire.
Right.
Yeah, they find Groot and a couple of other saplings on a planet.
It's like his little buddies.
On a planet, and they...
You know, I feel like it's the Losers Club from It, but for Groot.
And Mar-Vell wants to return back
to
their home.
Club?
Yeah.
It was interesting. I like the threat they use. I thought they were fun visually.
The art's pretty good in it throughout.
It is.
Yeah, this was fun. I didn't know what to expect from it, but I actually really enjoyed it.
And weirdly, a good book to read if you're a Captain Marvel fan, that is to say, original Captain Marvel.
Yep.
Also if you're a Groot fan.
Yeah, but like, the Groot thing is obvious. The Captain Marvel thing might be less obvious.
What's funny is, I don't consider myself a Captain Marvel fan. I'm not, like, a huge fan of him. But I liked this. I like seeing his early days.
Well, Dan Abnett has always been good with the cosmic stuff.
Yeah.
He kind of lends a bit of that realism that he, like, I think he learned, like, doing all those zillions of, like, Warhammer graphic novels, Warhammer 40K and stuff.
Yeah.
He's pretty good at world building, and so if you write an interesting story about anybody... Like, I'm not a big Mar-Vell fan, but you know, it's kind of good superhero sci-fi.
Yeah.
And it's actually somewhat rare to find that. Somebody who, like, he clearly likes thinking about it, but he also likes the pulp side of it.
You're a bigger fan of his son, Genus Fell.
I don't know if I'd say that.
I
am equally ambivalent about both of them.
Did y'all know that there is a Spider-Man movie coming in a couple months, in like a month?
Yes.
Because Marvel does. Because this week there are no less than like 5 Spider-Man books. All starting new, like, weekly stories. I mean,
stuff that when the movie hits will be collected, or they'll be out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so they're doing a weekly book, Spider-Man 2099 Dark Genesis, which is introducing Carnage 2099.
Are we about to say Nick?
No.
And,
but, like, if you want to get to know, like, I assume, Miguel, what's his name?
Miguel O'Hara.
O'Hara, the Spider-Man 2099, who looks, like, kind of villainish in the movie, but we don't know the details.
Yep.
This is your shot.
Yep. There is a new event coming out called Carnage Reigns, which has Cletus Cassidy, the sort of serial killer Carnage.
Yep. Classic Carnage.
What does he get? He gets some of the technology, right, Dave? I think your sign said something about
this. My understanding is that it's the Extremis armor.
The Extremis armor.
From Iron Man is like merged with the symbiote.
Right.
Man, Iron Man.
Yeah.
Why don't you put that in a vault or something?
I know.
You really ought to lock it up.
But this first issue, Alpha, is basically Miles Morales going up against Carnage.
Yeah.
And he, like, interfaced with Carnage during the Absolute Carnage event, so he's got a little bit of a knowledge of it. It's also guest starring Scorpion, an interesting turn of events.
I feel like
Scorpion?
Yep.
I feel like Cletus Cassidy would be a very scary person for someone as young as Miles is. Because he's like, you know, he's like Venom plus Hannibal Lecter.
Right. There is a Cult of Carnage, which I think this spins out of the Carnage Reign stuff. They're going to be some one-shots. This one-shot is called Misery. I think it's a one-shot, or is it a miniseries? It says to be continued, so maybe it's a miniseries.
Misery being the name of a new symbiote that you will meet in it.
Is a character from Spider-Man's history. Then we've got a new Edge of Spider-Verse number 1, which is has Spider-Rex, the dinosaur Spider-Man, and Spider-Killer, who I thought was like the assassin Spider-Man, but I believe it is just like a sort of a dark, like horror-ish Spider-Man. And there'll be a variety of new Spider-Men. So these are always good. There's always new first appearances of new Spider-Version characters.
Yeah, if you want to kind of get your feet wet, look for characters that might end up appearing in the movie. If you got kids who are hyped for the movie and would just like to see some different types of Spider-Men running around, there you go. There's also, of course, lots of graphic novels with Spider-Gwen, Miles, and even Spider-Ham.
Then we've got Spider-Man number 8, which is Dan Slott continuing his Spider-Man story that began with a big Spider-Verse and now is like doing a new thing with a sidekick called Spider-Boy, who comes from another timeline. This one is basically Spider-Man facing off with Electro, and has some interesting stuff to it. That's a different thing. This is him maybe experimenting with a spider sense a little bit.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah, I think Electro is in it.
It's funny. I remember only a few times when people have kind of thought to sort of do that, you know, like have him fine-tune the spider sense, or when he learned to use it to track his spider tracers.
Yeah.
But they have done that a few times, and it does feel like something that they you know, the broad bend of a lot of writers is they like to take a character and, like, add more power to them.
Right.
And I guess I'm glad that they haven't tried to do that with Spider-Man, you know, that he's not as strong as the Thing or something now.
Right.
But I wouldn't mind if he, like, you know, found a few, like, slightly novel uses for it. For the Spider-Sense.
Slott's always a good writer. He thinks through a different way. He's the one who gave the corporate Spider-Man and all that. This is a good issue. I'm kind of enjoying it. We have another issue of Demon Wars. That's the Pietro Mocco's sort of
Samurai Marvel Universe.
Samurai Marvel Universe.
Yep.
I believe this is a Scarlet Witch riff.
Yep.
Called Scarlet Sin. It's got very nice artwork.
You know, I still kind of, you know, I didn't really like the Multiverse movie. What was that called?
Multiverse of Madness.
Multiverse of Madness. But it did do an interesting job of catapulting Scarlet Witch to popularity. And people seem to like her villainy, as opposed to the kind of misogynistic take on it that I used to see all the time, which is, don't get me wrong, it's still in there. Where it's like, oh, she's done too much, she has to die, you know?
Yeah.
But I used to hear that, like, all the time about her, like, taking the powers of the mutants in the comics. It seems like her particular brand of villainy and, like, how it's tied into her kids and stuff in the movie left her with enough for people to like that villain. Lots of women cosplaying that character, and enjoying the high power level, her just ability to crush dudes.
Right.
So it's just interesting, and that has actually worked out in a way I didn't quite expect, and kind of it has enhanced her popularity pretty well.
Image has a book called Star Signs, which is by Saladin Ahmed and Megan Levins. And the basic pitch here is that the stars have vanished and maybe have given powers to 12 people along these sort of zodiac signs. And this focuses in on a young Lebanese woman who's a private chef who discovers she has the ability to manipulate time. And then it's going to go from there to more superhero-y stuff. It's cute. It's a fun first issue.
Sounds fun. Saladin Ahmed, what is he best known for?
Miss Marvel. He did Miles Morales.
Did a run on that, I was thinking. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Astrobots from Whatnot Publishing is a new thing from Simon Furman, the guy who did a lot of the beloved British Transformers stuff and American Transformers
stuff. Yeah, he wrote Transformers for
like
forever.
Decades. He's like what Larry Hama is to G.I. Joe. Yeah. He's the Transformers. And this is an original property that's tied into like an exclusive toy line about some, Nick, you probably know a little better than I do, robot explorers of sorts.
Yeah, like the human world is like dying and they send out robot explorers to find another home or something. Okay. And, but one is different than the others.
One what?
One robot. I don't know. Oh. It like gains sentience or something.
Is that like, oh, I guess I thought all the robots were sentient.
I don't know.
But I believe that they are kind of like, while these do not transform, as we are used to many of Simon Furman's creations doing, I think they have sort of the broad, big personalities of Transformers.
It feels like when he would do the politics of Transformers and that kind
right.
of stuff. Yeah.
I believe there is, you know, there will be kind of mainly a, probably a good faction and a evil faction or fascist-y faction. I'm curious about it. I think Transformers fans should check it out.
Yeah, for sure. And it's got nice art.
Yep.
There is a bunch of graphic novels this week. So we've got, Dave, that Ariel and the Curse of the Sea Witches.
Yeah, that's Ariel as in Disney's Ariel. I'm looking at this and I don't know if you ever had a chance to like see the art, Randy, but there's both
that's very pretty.
Really nice art that I think, and then there's these, it's her journal entries that have that art style that's like black and white. Check this out, Randy.
Yeah.
That looks really, it's nice and detailed drawings. I believe this might have been a European graphic album that was translated into English, you know, maybe like it was French or something first.
Right.
Just a vibe I'm getting. But it reminded me of the really nice art on those Star Wars adaptations that we have that are the all-ages ones.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, people, if you're a Little Mermaid fan, I didn't know that this was coming out, but this looks pretty cool, and it takes her out of her normal territory. They're very specifically, like, along the coastline of, like, traveling along the coastline of Denmark, I think, in it. And so it's not quite like typical high seas adventures. In fact, it looks like a decent amounts of it do take place on land, but she also gets to mermaid out.
Nah.
Well, it's like the Hulk. You got to have the Hulk comic, the Hulk has to Hulk out. Little Mermaid comic, she's got a mermaid out.
She's got a mermaid out. She's got a tail out.
Yes, tail out.
Tail out and tail on. Tail on.
I don't know if I like that sound.
Yo, tail. We've got the Dark Spaces Wildfire. This is IDW's book by Scott Snyder, I think.
I want to read that in the collected form. I think we've talked about this.
A little bit, yeah.
Snyder is a guy who probably reads best in a collected form. This is a story I know that... Isn't this the one about the female firefighters? They're prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Who are conscripted into doing firefighting. This is a real thing that happens.
Right.
And, they know that somewhere nearby, like in, you know, some like area of like pricey homes that are threatened by the fire, they know that there's like some heist thing that they can.
That's right. It's like a heist in the middle of a firefight thing.
Yes. Like with huge, you know, walls of fire moving around and all the changing situation, I guess you get in those. I don't know if there's more elements that come into play, but that alone, I was like, that's a good premise.
Yeah. we got the Dark Web trade, which is the.
X-Men, Spider-Man.
Basically sequel to Inferno. It's Madeline Pryor and Ben Reilly, the two clones of Spider-Man and Jean Grey, team up to take over Limbo, and as a result, Spider-Man and the X-Men are forced to deal with it.
Yep. What if instead of Madeline Pryor, what if it was Richard Pryor?
Interesting. What was that Joe like?
Well, we know it worked out really well in Superman 3 when he teamed with Superman.
This is a pretty good trade. This is it's not super expensive, but it has the Dark Web, the Spider-Man issues, the Venom issues, the Dark Web X-Men, Dark Web Miss Marvel, and Dark Web finale, and then some free comic book day stuff in there as well. So it's like, this is the whole big story.
You're going to get the whole deal in that.
Yeah, I thought it was a little silly that Magic, Ileana Rasputin, just gave Madeline Pryor limbo. Thought she was reformed and thought it was a good idea.
Well, she's probably like, I'm not using it.
Right, I mean, she wasn't.
Wait, Madeline Pryor, the Goblin Queen?
The Goblin Queen.
Gave Ileana?
No, Ileana gave the Goblin Queen limbo.
Has she ever done any nicey-nice stuff?
No.
Well, you know, Ileana sometimes is a little has bad judgment.
But also, like, it's a big hell dimension. What do you care? You
sometimes the Dark Child takes over. Sometimes. That's a thing.
Every villain was reformed on that's right. Krakoa, you know?
That's right. At some point, they will... Madeline Pryor will join the team.
Do you think Magic blames the Dark Child whenever she, like, gets in trouble for anything? He's like... Like, the Magic, you...
Who ate the rest of the ice cream in the freezer?
Oh, the Dark Child made me do it.
I'm 100% sure she does.
He's like, were you driving drunk? No, that was the Dark Child.
I spent my entire childhood in limbo. You don't know what it was like.
Yeah, that's great, but you also ate my cookies.
No, I didn't.
Maybe the Dark Child did. Gotta go.
We got the Spider-Man Life Story Extra Edition. This is a story we've all really loved. It's Chip Zdarsky... Mark Bagley, and it's basically a Spider-Man through the ages. It starts in the 60s when he gets his powers, and then each issue is a new decade, basically.
Yep.
As he...
Usually Spider-Man doesn't really age, and here he projects him forward where... some of the big things that happen each decade, like death of Gwen Stacy, arrival of Venom, Hobgoblin in the 80s, and stuff like that.
But there's also some nuance and interesting ideas, because like their idea of like Civil War...
Yeah, Civil War is basically fought over the Vietnam War between Captain America and Iron Man.
It's interesting.
And also, because Peter ages between 10 years between each issue that makes up the miniseries in this, you're going to see him dealing with threats at different sort of ages than he might have in the original comics. The one I always mention is just that he's notably older in this than when he first goes up against Venom, which is a very high-level threat, and probably worse when you're, like, in your 40s or 50s. I forget where he is. You'll see marriages or not. There's, like, kids or not. I don't want to quite reveal what happens. And I think it takes him all the way through to his end day.
Yeah.
Without saying too much, it's got some dark stuff in it, but it's also really good and has that kind of heroic... heart.
I'm just going to say, if you like Spider-Man, buy this book.
Yeah, this is kind of one we all recommend.
You know, remember the, what was the Superman that Busiek did?
Yeah, Superman Secret Identity.
Superman Secret Identity, it's like, everybody should read that. All Superman fans should read, like, Superman, All-Star Superman. All Spider-Man fans should read this. It's a rare opportunity to do Spider-Man's full life story while also encapsulating a lot of what's happened, but still making it original enough.
And this one includes the annual, correct?
Right. So after the miniseries ended, the annual that focused sort of on J. John Jameson and what he did throughout the years. Yeah. And this is included in that version.
No, it's also a really good annual. It's a really good story.
I'm going to reveal the premise. I know we've already talked about it before. Because JJJ gets busted for creating the Spider Slayer. Which that was a thing in the comics at the time.
Yeah.
He gets busted in and goes to jail and like serves some real time. Yep. And this reveals what happens to him over the course of that time. Does it change him? Does it not? Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But it's another thing. It's like Chip Zdarsky, when he was writing this, was playing with that whole span of time. How does Spider-Man change over a course of a lifetime? You know, will it be MJ? Will it be Gwen Stacy? Will it be neither of them? So, anyway.
Then we got the Marvel Epic Collection of Spider-Gwen Ghost Spider. Want to clarify... Modern epic era is not. They're not saying you're old if you remember when Spider-Gwen came out.
Yes. Yesterday I was freaking out because the Epic collections typically collect 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90s comics. I'm okay with that. That's what they're all about reprinting. But when I saw that there was an Epic collection of Spider-Gwen, who was created like, I don't know, 5 minutes ago.
2014.
5 minutes ago.
Yeah, but a lot of this stuff has been out of print.
Yep.
Hard to find.
They relaunched it several times. So this has the Edge of Spider-Verse with Sister Sinister. It's got her first 5-issue mini. It's got her 8-issue mini that came out after that. And it's got the Spider-Woman crossover that had Silk and Spider-Woman in it. So that's what the first part is.
What the Epic collections always do that. They try and collect the totality of a character's story. Including crossovers and stuff. Yep. Spider-Gwen had a somewhat complicated one because she started in like a one-shot, and then she had a mini-series, and then there was an ongoing series. And although all of that stuff was in print for a while, it was hard to know where you should start. This is as clear-cut as you're ever going to get, and it has it all.
Yep.
There's also Star Trek Lower Decks, which I forgot. This is Ryan. This is by Ryan North.
Yep. It's really good.
Our beloved favorite Robin Ryan North, who's doing Fantasy Four right now.
Yep. But who before that was doing something maybe more in line with this, which was Squirrel Girl. Lower Decks, Star Trek, really one of the big successes of the modern Star Trek era.
For sure.
They're sort of. From one of the creators of Rick and Morty, and you know a bit of them, more about the B-listers on a starship, the people doing the sort of the more blue collar work on the ship,
they still get up to Star Trek hijinks.
Absolutely.
But it's interesting because before Strange New Worlds came out, this was the Star Trek that everybody I knew seemed excited about, except for you and me. I've come around, I think, a little more than you have,
it's well done. It's just a little too Deadpool for me.
Yeah, but it's fun, and this is, like I say, Ryan North doing it is the right guy to be doing it. It's original stories using the crew of the Cerritos.
Yep, these are most Star Trek fans I know love this show because it is the ultimate sort of Easter egg show. It also does have some heart to it. And also has like real love for Star Trek. They'll mention obscure episodes. The Easter eggs are like peak Easter egg.
Yeah.
And there's some good crew dynamics. Like the most outlaw type character of the group is her mom is the ship's captain. That's a baseline dynamic.
Yep. Then there's Hackslash Volume 3, the hardcover. They're collecting all that in the hardcovers. Hackslash is really fun. We've talked about it numerous times before. It's Tim Seeley's. Basically, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, she hunted serial killer, or Jason and Freddy type killers.
Yeah, a little bit more edge on there.
Also want to mention, just for other stuff that continued, it's a really great issue of Moon Knight this week that has him team up with Venom. It's a good one-shot. You could read that if you're not reading Venom.
You know it's pretty good because Randy, not a big Venom fan.
Not a big fan. Joe Fixit wraps up. The TMNT Usagi Yojimbo number 2 comes out, and it's just as good as the first one
was. It is good.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine number 2 comes out. I'm also really enjoying that. Issue 2 of Hairball, the weird horror cat book.
Continues to be weird and very horror-filled.
Matt Kent.
And I don't know, anything else you all have in your stacks, or is that everything?
No,
I missed? Adventures of John Kent Superman number 3 comes out this week.
Yep.
And that issue was great.
I really thought that was a great issue.
You know what? I need to make a sign for that because, like, the big thing for this is people who played the Injustice game, the series has formally crossed over into the Injustice world right now.
Yeah.
Which means the sort of young, idealistic Jonathan Kent is now seeing the Superman who became a fascist.
Right.
There's no other way to put it from the video game other than to note that Tom Taylor wrote the stories based on that, and he made it as nuanced as you possibly could to write about why Superman would fall to those levels, and it's super good. Like, he's writing about it really intelligently. If you like Injustice, if you like previous Superboy stuff that he was writing, you absolutely need to be reading this.
For sure. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about news for the week. We have 2 weeks of news to get to here because I was out last week.
Thanks, Randy. Thanks for making this long podcast.
We're
tired.
People love long podcasts.
I don't know what people are doing right now. Somebody chopping up some carrots, maybe.
Yeah.
Could be out on a walk listening on the podcast, listening in their car. Could be murdering someone. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's to our American Psycho style. You got the earphones in, chopping somebody up with an axe, and yelling about Huey Lewis or possibly about G.I. Joe.
We're in their ears talking about movie trailers,
and he's yelling about, "What do you think about Storm Shadow, Cyrus?"
What's the longest podcast you've listened to?
I've listened to long podcasts.
Yeah.
I think the longest one was probably a podcast of the then new what's the RPG one that people listen to? Critical Role.
Okay,
it's like 3 or 4 hours.
I don't do podcasts longer than an hour.
Ever? No, you've done some.
Sure. I don't. If it's longer than an hour, I start to lose interest. So there's
okay.
So I am a 30-minute podcast person, which is funny because none of the podcasts I do.
I was going to say,
I will listen to long podcasts if they've got my attention, and I'll just listen to it over time.
Yeah.
I'll listen to 30 minutes when I'm driving, 40 minutes when I'm walking, whatever.
Yeah, that's what I do.
I mean, I listened to The Dollop, and it was a longer podcast, but it took me a while to get through it.
The one I'm listening to now is like 4 hours long.
Oh my God.
What is it?
It's like it's screen drafts, so they're just like ranking movies. But
well, maybe they're just rating a screenplay aloud. And then the director says, "Interior day." Camera zooms in.
And if they were doing that, I would not listen to it.
Let's talk about some trailers or something.
All right, yes. So let's start with the Star Trek: Strange New Worlds teaser, right. Or I guess it's the trailer for season 2.
Real quick question. We all like Strange New Worlds, right?
Yes, love Strange New Worlds. My favorite Trek.
Right.
Even with Deep Space Nine in the mix, I believe Strange New Worlds is still my favorite.
Pike is like...
I'm still making up my decision. I like Deep Space Nine so far.
Yep.
But...
You haven't gotten the best Deep Space Nine.
That is true.
It really is like, what, season 3 that it just kicks in?
You know, yeah, I am not always one a person who thinks that, like, the later seasons where they get more tied together are always, like, the best ones. In fact, I'm the weirdo who usually doesn't think that. Deep Space Nine is definitely that one.
I'm still in season 2. I just finished the John Glover episode.
Season 2 is really good. And season 1, like, there's really very few bad episodes of Deep Space Nine. When you get into, like, season 3 and 4, that's when you're getting to the, like,
you're just like,
this is why people
move along home, Randy.
But anyway.
No.
Pike, he's going to go down as one of the great captains.
Yes.
I'm sure a lot of people already have him in the top spot. He's kind of like a more chill Kirk in some ways, but not as stuffy as Picard.
He's inspiring.
He is. He's got some, I feel like he's got some 60s right stuff kind of attitude.
And it's nice to have a captain to have that kind of ability to inspire and, like, love, as opposed to a lot of the other captains who feel a little like Picard was intellectual and
Kirk was horny.
Kirk
was a little bit more of the can the chatter people.
Yeah, he was. He was a Cyclopsy person.
And Sisko is... I'm still trying to figure out Sisko.
Sisko is the best captain besides...
Sisko is fantastic.
Yeah. Sisko is the best captain.
But by and large, he's not sort of doing normal captain stuff at the moment where
no,
you
he's,
are.
He's letting
he is
Kira
just trying
go on.
To, he is just trying to keep that station from falling
She's
apart.
She's letting Kira going and Bajoran, like, missions
to... until you see him on the Howl of the Defiant, you're going to love it.
Oh, yeah. But Pike, like, he invites his crewmen to his quarters.
He's got
quarters, by the way.
He cooks dinner for him.
He's got a whole Space Daddy vibe going, too.
He does.
He's got, like, a wry sense of humor. Like, Pike is absolutely... This version of Pike is my favorite captain.
It's going to be hard to...
Ensign Mount does an amazing job.
Ensign Mount's doing a great job here.
Yep, and so season 1, really, really very good. Like, my only complaints were the sort of the Gorn episodes, and even then I was like, those are pretty well done, but they just... They made the Gorn, you know, the big lizard people that Kirk fought, they kind of retconned them to be more... Like insanely deadly predatory, and more like alien xenomorphs.
People who don't know, Dave's gornophobic.
I'm gornophobic. Actually, on Discord, my handle there is Dave is a Gorn. No, it really is.
I was
doing it for the podcast.
So wait a minute. Does this mean, Dave, that you are a Gorn truther and you don't like these fake Gorn?
I guess I'd say so. I like the slow-moving, shambling Gorn of Kirk's original, but we'll also accept the one other time that they really made a showing, which was in the Enterprise episode where that was set exclusively in the Mirror Universe, no heroes, and there was a Gorn-like mercenary in there that was wrecking people. And he was CG. You can guess probably that the CG of, like, 2003, not the best. But he was pretty cool looking.
I feel like they're going to reveal that this is not the Gorn, or this is going to be some offshoot or something.
Maybe, yeah. I
mean, I think by and large they've done well. There's some complainers like me, but I don't know that we're enough to listen
but
to.
But I mean, for it to fit in with the continuity and stuff like that,
it's a little
they're
weird.
They're going to have to do something different.
Yeah, it's one of those things that doesn't even, like... I don't mind obviously changing the look of things over time. You know,
except
special effects
don't
evolve.
Mess with those.
Yeah, we're glad to see the classic Klingons back.
Classic Klingons are back. Yep. But yes, the Gorns, going from like, mostly we've seen they're young in this one, but they're very fast moving, like an alien xenomorph.
Yeah.
Compared to the lumbering Hulk, who probably, if done the way that Gene Roddenberry might have imagined it, probably would have looked how he did on the Enterprise, which was like this big, roided up lizard man with a long tail, a little bit more raptor like,
mm-hmm.
but like a big raptor man kicking ass. And it was solidly fast in that Enterprise episode. Anyway, let's get to the new trailer. It's one of those trailers that shows lots of different things. It starts with sort of an inspiring type speech from...
Being narrated by Una?
Una, yeah, a.k.a. number one, a.k.a. Rebecca Romijn.
She's having so much fun in this role. I mean, that's, you can tell from this, unless they're just really good at masking it, it seems to me like the people making this show love making this show. Like, Rebecca Romijn, Anson Mount, whoever is playing Ortega.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh man.
Like, they all seem to be having a blast. When the bit where, in the trailer, where Kirk comes aboard, and who's the sort of the, she's a Klingon, she's Noonien Singh's, like, ancestor, or descendant, right?
Right, right, it's the engineer.
She's not
security, yes.
And Una looks over, she's like, you got kind of a vibe going with him.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like, it's making me sweat.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
You know, whenever I watch the behind-the-scenes shows and stuff like this, it actually does seem like it's one of those, and maybe it's not the case, but I believe most crews, most of the groups since the 60s, mm-hmm. Everybody knows that people don't like Shatner and stuff like that.
Right.
But like the Next Gen crew, they were like all at each other's weddings and stuff like that. They're like best man at their weddings and stuff. They're friends. And I think that has been the case, you know, like some version of that for all the different shows.
Yep.
Don't know about Enterprise. Don't know if anybody know. I think they're all in like
Dave, who's
alleys.
Who's the best Gorn at your Gorn wedding?
Who's
the best Gorn at your Gorn wedding?
I don't know.
All right. I was trying to trick him, revealing he was secretly a Gorn. It was not working.
Okay, I didn't know we were going to run with that.
You're a Gorn.
I am a Gorn.
It's right in your name.
I am a Gorn. There is what appear to be Gorn in this trailer.
Yep.
Briefly glimpsed is what I think was a Gorn, maybe a Biggie Gorn, I don't know.
Adult
like,
Gorn.
With its Gorn face right in somebody's face.
It looked very alien-like.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it, like, the kind of the jaw kind of thing.
Yep.
There's also Ortega flying this is one thing I like.
Is it Ortega or Ortegas?
Ortegas.
Ortegas? Okay. Mm-hmm. Flying the ship, like, doing fancy flying. I love that they've given, they did this Discovery as well with...
A little more maneuverability to the ship.
What's the character's name? Who's the... Detmer.
Detmer, yes.
Where they're like... And they gave Chekhov a little bit of this, too. The notion of like, oh, it's actually not just pushing buttons and stuff. You are a pilot. You know how to fly these ships.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a cool thing.
And we get more Mbenga?
A little bit of Mbenga, not a lot.
There was in multiple
big,
scenes.
His
of like,
storyline got kind of resolved.
In a great fashion.
More than I expected to.
Right,
yeah.
And it was a storyline that I was a little worried about dragging. It did just a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, man, they were so on the ball as far as that. Like, you know, so for, just in case you haven't seen Strange New Worlds, unlike every other Trek show has been in the last, you know, like 5-6 years,
mm-hmm.
it is not done in the standard serial format, but rather a callback to the episodic days of the 60s show, or Picard, or even Deep Space Nine,
yeah,
a lot of the time.
I was going to say.
but they use all the techniques we have in modern stuff, which is to say character arcs will continue through from one episode to the next. There's like long running mysteries and plot lines and stuff like that, whether it's Spock's betrothed
I suddenly couldn't say it either.
It's been a little too long since I've been watching the show. And by the way, she's been your great character.
Yeah,
I don't know if I saw her in this trailer, but I loved her in the previous season.
Yeah, she was really good.
Fantastic.
And Pike had like his own subplot because he had some knowledge of his future that was hanging over his head. Yes, his future, if you know Star Trek lore at all, you know it's bad. And Dr. Mbenga had a subplot, a big subplot to deal with. And it happened, and it was resolved, in a really fantastic episode that involved them dressing like knights.
Yep.
That was wonderful.
So that's the fun thing on Strange New Worlds, is that it does embrace that kind of adventurous spirit of mostly the original series, but it's also the kind of thing that had them in like, Sherwood Forest and Next Generation and stuff like that. What else in this? Klingons. We saw Spock drinking probably blood wine with Klingons.
Sure.
One of the Klingons pats him on the back in that way, like, ha ha ha, and Spock looks like, that's great.
the guy playing Spock, was Ethan Peck? Is that his
yes.
name? He's doing a great job with him. There's a bit where when Ortegas is about to fly the ship, where he, like, gives her, like, a cocked eyebrow, like, he's like, oh, we're all gonna die. Like, there's yeah. a nice little bit of reserved, right. sardonic, humor from him.
He picked up on some moves from Leonard Nimoy.
And then yeah. they do the thing at the end of the trailer, which I know, Dave, you were not a big fan of. The everybody's just in the chair has a thing they say, because, you know,
like engage, or
because Picard's the one who actually started that. His engage thing was
right.
him.
Kirk didn't particularly have
Kirk
a thing.
Kirk didn't have a thing. And then all of a sudden, everybody's got a thing.
Right.
What was Voyager? What was hers? She's like Voyage on.
They wasn't that big a thing even in any of those days in like DS9 or anything either. But she I think like, there was
give
just
me,
like
give me my coffee.
Yeah, stuff like that. It was like, but I think there was like probably a phrase that they said more often. You yeah. almost like Kirk just saying he probably said take us out plenty of times.
Yeah,
but it's like it wasn't like self conscious. But yes, they have gotten it to the point where like when people take the role of captain now. There's kind of like an expectation from the bridge crew that you're going to have some kind of catchphrase.
That said, I feel like that is very much a modern day thing. Just they did it with Seven and Picard. They did it with.
They definitely did it with Saru in
Saru,
Discovery.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And also when Burnham took over the captaincy,
right? Right. So this is more of a Discovery thing.
Apparently, Janeway said, "Do it."
Okay.
No. Sure.
And then Pike says, "Hit it."
Yep. In the movies, he said, "Punch it."
Does he punch it? Oh, yep. That's right. Yeah.
I kind of like punch it a little bit better, but it's it gets a little more violent.
Dave, well, if you were in the captain's chair, what would your catchphrase be?
Let's go, Daddy, go. That's obviously what I would do. What about
amazing,
you, Randy?
Amazing. I think it would be, let's see, what would mine be?
Let's get this mother turnt up.
Nick, you have a catchphrase?
I really don't. Also got Kirk in a being befuddled by a revolving door.
Yes, it looks like there is time travel to the present. I believe I've heard people say that is some mall in Canada.
It looks like a gap.
Yep. Time travel and Star Trek go together quite well.
All the time. Yeah, they just do it.
I sometimes think that they need to do it a little bit less. But then they do it, and they do it well, and
always
I think,
good.
All right.
What's the song they use in this trailer?
Great Heights by the Postal Service, and it's a remake. It's somebody's remake.
It's a really good
one.
And yeah. It fits kind of
it's
the,
a really good one.
This inspiring
yep.
kind of like
yeah.
notion
yeah.
behind
who,
this.
I don't remember who did this version of it, but it's really good.
Yeah.
Anyway, good first trailer. There's not a lot you can make of it. It's just fun to see those characters again.
Exactly.
And you know... Discovery, Randy, you probably like Discovery a little bit more than me. I still like Discovery quite a bit in spite of some flaws. It was the one that brought Trek back after,
yeah.
Well, I guess you could say J.J. Abrams' Trek kind of got the ball rolling. But as far as back to TV, that was Discovery.
What's funny, Dave, is that I've soured a little bit on Discovery.
Yeah.
After having watched Strange New Worlds and Picard Season 3 and Deep Space Nine, where I'm like,
right.
Oh, I love Discovery because to me it was what I wanted. But they've done Star Trek I Wanted More. I just hadn't watched it.
Right.
So, yeah. I like Discovery, but I have soured a little. I'm not the fan I was.
I love the first two seasons of Discovery, and then I think it goes way downhill.
No, I like all of them. I think every season has ups and downs, and big ups and downs.
You need to see the last season.
Right? Yeah.
But there was a reason I brought it up, and then y'all got me sidetracked. I was going to say something about it.
You were saying there's some continuity with it? I don't know.
I don't know. How important could it be?
Couldn't be. Anyway, next trailer, Insidious: The Red Door. I think we all like the Insidious franchise.
Shockingly consistent, spooky
yeah.
series.
Yep.
I think after the last Conjuring, which I would have said the Conjuring movies were my favorite, I think I have to now say Insidious is the best James Wan horror property that he's done.
As far as like the persistent horror.
Yeah, the persistent kind of, yeah. And the larger right. continuity story-wise.
So, for me, this is the thing, because it turns out I'm not as big of a James Wan fan as y'all are. I am a fan of Leigh Whannell, the writer that he works with,
yeah.
and then took over directing some of them. But this is the premise of the first one was that there's a family, there's evil spirit trying to trap their comatose child in a room called The Further.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings in an older psychic lady.
Elise,
is that her name?
Yes.
Yeah.
Played by the actress Lynn Shea, who's been in a lot of horror stuff.
Yep.
and her kind of team of goofy ghost hunter nerds.
One of them being Lable now.
Yep. Right. Specs and Tucker.
The script writer is, in fact, one of the doofus ghost hunters, and he does very good with it.
He does.
So they've done, what, four of these? There was Insidious, yeah. Insidious 2, there was Skeleton Key, and I think there was another one?
Yes. And you could say that, the latter two weren't maybe as strong as, the first one or two.
But they're pretty good. They do focus more in on Lin Shaye's character, though, and I like that.
Right. I guess, spoiler warning, she doesn't turn out so great in the first movie.
No, things don't go great for her.
Nah.
So the other movies are mostly flashbacks.
Yeah.
Or she appears in the Further or something like that.
Yeah. Right. So that's the kind of... And that is pretty cool. They have their own lore and mythology they've built up of demons and their otherworldly place, the Further. That shows up in pretty much all of
the
them.
Further, the other and realm.
And this has also got a really good cast in the Rose Byrne and Patrick Wilson.
Right.
I think they do a great job as...
Patrick Wilson's in all of this stuff, whether it's The Conjuring or Insidious.
Well, and this is a big deal for him because this new movie is actually directed by him.
That's right.
Interesting.
And Leigh Whannell's writing it. Juan is producing.
Yeah, so it's feels still a really good team.
This is called Insidious the Red Door, and it is going, it's like 10 years later.
The kid who was comatose is now a teenager.
He's going to college,
and he's like an art student, and he's got this weird, creepy stuff going on, like a hand that comes out of his charcoal painting, and it looks like it like almost burns
him. It seems like even though they've had their memories repressed, those things are still after them.
Right,
and
did some hypnotic, post-hypnotic thing. To keep them from...
Yeah.
Because there was something like, if you remember this, you'll release it, or something that. I do need to kind of... I wouldn't mind rewatching.
I need to rewatch, too, because I remember, vague bits.
At least the first two are the ones that I think are the main ones for this character.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember the first one is the one movie my wife finds utterly terrifying.
It's pretty scary.
I remember when I first watched it, I thought it went downhill when they went to The Further, because that was a little bit more adventurous and not as scary.
Yeah.
But now that I know, now that that's like such a staple of the series later on, now I like it.
Yeah.
But like the scary parts, especially in the first half of that movie, freaking scary.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get more of the Red-Faced Demon and
some of the lore built out.
See, the Red-Faced Demon was one of those things I saw as a meme first.
Right.
And when I saw it in the movie, I was like, oh, there it is.
Right, it's a little bit, oops.
Also saw another sort of scary movie trailer, Haunting in Venice.
Right.
Which is
Agatha Christie mystery, the Poirot.
So I will say that three quarters of this trailer I thought was just a horror movie.
Yeah, you're like,
what is this? A horror movie in Venice? That sounds like fun. And then Poirot shows up.
He's like, we are all of us afraid.
Here's the thing.
That's pretty good Poirot, though.
That's pretty good.
I like Kenneth Branagh. I even like his movie version of Poirot.
They are both... both the previous movies that have come out have been pretty fun.
Death of the Nile was a little...
Okay, I haven't finished watching Death of the Nile.
Death of the Nile was not great.
Okay. What was its weakness?
Just too many people, and it just went on and on and on and
interesting.
On. The first one was... I actually thought was really good. Not as good as the original.
Right, but pretty dang good.
But pretty dang good. And he always kind of swindles a really cool past. Here we have Michelle Yao as a fortune teller or
some psychic medium?
Psychic
or
medium,
something.
Yeah. And it looks like she is doing either actual medium work or a con or something like that, and somehow Poirot gets involved.
I'm pretty sure Agatha Christie doesn't do actual.
I don't think so either.
But I don't know the story, and so it might be kind of fun to go into it. I'm going to go into it not knowing.
But it also looks like it could just be bringing up a lot of people's past histories, and that's what's haunting them in a lot of ways.
Right. I think it's kind of clever to stage it so it looks like it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
And then say, oh, shit, it's basically another Sherlock Holmes just walked into this.
Yeah, I thought this was a really good trailer. better than the Death of the Nile trailer. So... I am
I don't
actually
remember the Death of the Nile trailer. I think I remember thinking that the trailer was actually pretty decent.
Eh.
I remember I actually loved the trailer for Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah, I think I liked that one just because I kind of knew what the deal was. I knew what the
that has one of the most famous endings of the movie.
Yeah, but it was the execution and sort of the style that he put on. Kenneth Branagh has a style, and it's really it's one that I like. So this one looks fun. It reminds me a lot of, I know you're not going to appreciate this, but sort of the horror of, was it Dead Again? Or the The one he did with Emma Thompson.
Oh, yeah, that was like a suspense horror
sort of
thing.
And it had sort of some of, not the same vibe, but sort of. And
he's played around with, like, that kind of, you know, is it supernatural, is it not before?
Yep.
I've seen none of these.
Have you not seen Murder on the Orient Express?
No. I've got it. I'm not a big Kenneth Branagh fan.
Oh, okay.
You should watch that one, though.
If you say so.
I mean, do you know the twist just through osmosis?
No.
If you don't know the twist, then you need to see it.
You need to see it.
It's
think
one of the
all-time really
great reveals.
Poirot the Murderer.
Maybe.
Is Poirot secretly King Kong?
Yes.
Of course. See, I guess the twist. All right. We saw the trailer for Hunger Games, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. This is the prequel to Hunger Games.
Yes.
Which was a very successful book.
Which I don't know how you hang an entire story on an evil president. But
I don't
know.
President Snow is like the he's the mentor to the person.
He's basically the Woody Harrelson's character from the Hunger Games. Which I guess the deal is that it's not quite that of like a partnership.
It's more like an arena, by the way. At this point, too, it's like not, more of a it's low. It's
well, this
low
is
budget.
Like this is like the very not, like first Hunger. Or
I think here's the thing for me: the Hunger Games is about like. Overcoming, it's like younger people overcoming this fascist system that they've grown up in, and it's all this metaphor about you know the 1% and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Well, there's also some weird like farmer right wing stuff in there you can interpret.
Yeah,
there's weird interpretations of Hunger Games.
And even the finale, there was like the political corruption and things like that that didn't pertain to. The snow.
I don't know what the arc is of this because the arc of this is at the end of it there will be more Hunger Games. So I don't know what
it's
story you tell here.
I guess the analog would be the Star Wars prequels where it's like, you know, oh, this is how Liberty dies to thunderous applause.
Oh, that's
it's
true, and that worked out really well for everybody.
There's a lot of a lot of cartoons you've watched based on that.
That's true.
I think there's.
I'll watch the Hunger Games cartoon by Dave Filoni.
There's something.
Me too.
I'm sure there's something there. I think I read the first Hunger Games.
Is there anybody good working on this?
I don't know.
I like the cast a lot.
Yeah, the cast seems good.
It's Rachel Zegler who's playing, I guess, the main character that is not Snow. She was the lead in...
The name sounds familiar.
What crap am I...
Oh, this is the 10th Hunger Games that they're doing, by the way.
Oh, so the 10th, so it's not the first.
They split some stuff up.
Well, this is the director of the...
Do you mean it's the 10th movie that they've made?
No, it's the 10th Hunger Games is in the...
Like, in the world.
Okay. Well, probably like the first one they just did in a room or something.
Well, this director directed Mockingjay Part 1 and Catching Fire.
Okay, so
also
there's...
also Constantine and I Am Legend.
Okay, that's a solid pedigree.
It is.
I kind of liked I Am Legend.
I did too.
Also did Red Sparrow.
I give him a very solid...
That was not good.
I kind of like him.
But she apparently...
we'll allow it.
Yeah.
And directed Lady Gaga's Bad Romance music video.
That's a pretty big one. So what I'm guessing maybe... I don't know. Maybe this is common knowledge or whatever. But that they will... The seeds of rebellion will get planted. But here's the thing. If the lead characters who get Hunger Games in this just die, like Rogue One or something, that can go over well with audiences, too. They're like, shit, that's hardcore.
Rachel Zegler
people love watching teenagers die.
Yep, and then they'll be like, we should rebel one day, maybe in about 15 years.
She's the lead from West Side Story.
Oh, interesting. I should watch that one day.
You should.
Have you not... I thought you watched the new one.
No.
I watched the new one.
Oh, okay.
But we're not the same person.
No.
And this isn't the lead from the original one, who's be like 800 now.
Yes.
And I saw that Jason Schwartzman is playing the younger version of Stanley Tucci.
Caesar Flickerman.
Yeah. I never finished watching the Hunger Games.
Right.
I liked them pretty well.
I read the book.
But did you read all the books?
Yes, I read all the books.
Okay.
But I haven't read this prequel book because
okay.
I didn't want to read it.
Oh, is it based on a book?
This is based on a book.
No, she did another book.
Oh, I thought this was like the movie was going on its own momentum.
No, Suzanne Collins just wrote another one that
focused on Snow. Well, I'll allow that the creator might have known what was going on.
Maybe.
So far hasn't said anything transphobic, so yay
therefore,
for that.
Better than J.K. Rowling.
Yes. Yeah, I think I saw the last one of the movies and I hated it in theaters.
You did, and you put me off
and
I watched it.
And I was like, it was the worst experience ever, but my wife, Kaylee, loves these movies and she'll just have them on as kind of comfort food, which is weird.
That's not that weird.
It's not that weird. And I've rewatched it, and I'm like, okay, it was not as bad as I remember.
See, Nick put me off the movie forever, and he's like, this movie isn't so bad. And I'm like, no, you told me it was terrible. Now I don't believe you. You've been gotten to a Caesar Flickerman.
Well, we'll see if we'll see if this guy can hold a candle to a Donald Sutherland.
What?
Donald Sutherland was such a good villain. We'll see if this guy can kind of.
He's no Caesar Flickerman.
No.
What's next, Randy?
Next up is the Gran Turismo trailer, which I lobbied to take out because we all hated this trailer.
I think hate is a strong word. I think it's a silly premise that doesn't. I guess it's a true story.
It's a true story. Somehow, real quick rewind. In case you didn't grow up in the 90s and play the Gran Turismo games on PlayStation 1 and 2, they were the realistic driving games where like you had to like worry about shifting tire widths, torque, things like that.
Your brake pads disintegrating.
Yeah, they were. They had like this, what at the time looked like photorealistic graphics, and then did get better and better even over time. It was beyond me. I was a Need for Speed guy. Same. I was a lunkhead.
Give me Need for Speed or Burnout.
Yep. But these games were popular with people who knew stuff about cars sometimes.
Yep.
And they clearly had like some real work done on them. Apparently some kid who was like the best Gran Turismo player got to actually be in real
racer. He got racing.
And this is that story.
This is his
was
story.
It a contest? Did they say?
It looks like it was a contest.
Yeah.
And does anybody know, did he win anything? Did he place last? Did he suck?
What do I know about Gran Turismo?
Let's quick look it up. Let's Google it and not see the shitty movie.
All right, fair enough. it's some rich guy who runs a racing team.
Played by,
who is that guy?
Legolas.
Oh, Orlando Bloom, right.
Orlando Bloom.
And you will not be surprised to learn that the arc of the trailer is a kind of, you know, a loser dude learning to maybe take his video game knowledge and transfer it to practical, real driving. Oh, can he do it? Everybody's making fun of him. It seems so crazy.
I'm also a kid who wants to be a racer, but his family is very, like, poor.
Right.
And his father was like, we can never do that because do you know how expensive racing is?
You'll be surprised that he has a scrappy coach who doesn't really think he can do it. That's played by David Harbour.
Yep, David Harbour looks like he's as much as you can with this, having fun.
He's also just playing David Harbour, I think.
Playing David Harbour, chewing the kid out, giving him some tough love.
Like, if you were to see this in the theater, I think this is kind of like Top Gun Maverick. You see in the theater, the racing sequences are going to be cool.
This cannot be Top Gun Maverick.
Top Gun Maverick
was great.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
Top Gun Maverick was not great.
One of the appeals of Top Gun Maverick, it's not great. I'm with
David. What the hell? I thought you guys really enjoyed it.
I did really
you
enjoy it.
You played it. You based an RPG
I
on it.
I did really enjoy it.
I was trying to fix it.
I did really enjoy it. It's not great. I don't think it's everyone was like, it's better than the first one. No, it's
like
not.
A 4-star movie for me.
It's good.
Anyway,
by the way, I did a Star Wars gay RPG that took basic Top Gun flight school idea and used it. I did not like set it in Top Gun Land because why would I want to set it in the same place
unless
as a mediocre
space volleyball?
Movie? There was space volleyball, but there was actually surfing. But it wasn't just regular surfing. Star Wars surfing.
Yeah. Anyway, my point, though, is not that it's going to be as good as the mediocre Top Gun Maverick.
Nice. Nice F you.
People are turning off this podcast right now. They all liked it, Randy, and now they hate you, as they should. But don't hate me, because I said it nicer.
No, I actually did like Top Gun. But my point is not that it's going to be like the same level of quality, but that the Top Gun, one of the things it had going for it was that those flight sequences were all like practical effects are super cool. And this looks like all practical driving and very big, like you know, spectacles you want to see on the big screen.
At some point they show
racing.
At some point they show a car crash that I don't think was in the video game. I think it was in the real world. Or maybe it wasn't, but it looked CG-ish to me.
It might be.
I will say, if you gave me a choice, if I could watch the new Gran Turismo or if I could rewatch Days of Thunder, I would probably choose Days of Thunder.
So I've seen Days of Thunder in the last couple of years, and I think I'd probably watch Gran Turismo. Well, no, I wouldn't, because Days of Thunder is dumb, but it is, like, goofy dumb.
I would choose Cole Trickle every time.
Cole Trickle.
That's the lead?
That's Tom Cruise's name.
Wait, his last name is Trickle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cole Trickle.
It's the worst name, yeah.
Why'd they do that?
So the names in Days of Thunder.
What is Yondu's name? Glorious. I can't remember.
Yeah, Yondu is his mentor or is
no, it's his rival.
He's his rival. Okay.
What? Coal Trickle. Who would win if he fought the dude? Who's the Hunger Games guy?
Caesar Flickerman.
Caesar Flickerman versus Coal Trickle. Yeah.
That's a good
finally
point.
The battle you've been waiting for.
We're on a tangent now. I'm sorry. Robert Duvall plays his mentor, the guy who brings him to racing.
Yep, that's a good anchor.
His name is Harry Hogg.
Oh, no.
Harry Hogg, people.
That's like, that's a name that Stanley might have, like, on a bender come up with and then rejected still.
No, Cary Elwes is his, like, his, like, nemesis. His, like, younger guy who's coming up.
Cary Elwes?
Cary Elwes plays Russ Wheeler.
Okay, well...
But what Michael Rooker plays
Michael
is,
Rooker,
like... He is, like, the guy who's, like, the older guy who's, like, his...
No, also, it's, like...
They come together at the end.
They come together to be friends.
Evil kid. And Michael Rooker's character is named Rowdy Burns.
Yeah.
And Fred Thompson is named Big John. John C. Reilly is named Buck Bretherton.
Did they roll some dice to get these names?
Robert Towne wrote this story, and yeah, it's...
I will say, though, it is dumb fun.
It is dumb fun.
It's not good, but it's very entertaining.
Dr. Claire Lewicki, played by Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, this is where they met.
It is straight up sexual harassment the way he treats her.
Yes, 100%.
Man, yeah, no, you're right. I would watch Days of Thunder. I mean, it's not a good movie.
No.
But I bet it's better than Gran Turismo.
But I don't think Gran Turismo is going to be a good movie.
No, but I think the racing might be fun for people who like watching racing.
And I base that on the fact that Neil Blomkamp has not made a movie I care about.
Yeah, Neil Blomkamp, people like him. I don't like
District
him,
9 was probably
the best movie he's made. Worse than Top Gun Maverick.
Absolutely.
What about the Wonders of Elysium?
Oh, man.
Real quick rewind.
Yes.
Okay.
I had to look this up just because you said it and then it just hung there. Robert Towne, who won an Oscar for the screenplay to Chinatown.
Yeah.
Wrote Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
Yes. That is correct.
People gotta eat.
Cocaine. Oh, my God. Stay away. If ever there was a lesson.
Quite the arc as a career.
Well, I mean, I think this was produced by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer. So, I mean, cocaine was still there.
Cocaine was definitely there. All right. The other racing movie we saw a little teaser for is Twisted Metal. And this I'm actually kind of looking forward to.
Somehow also a video game racing thing, sort of. But also for you,
car fire wars thing.
Yes, if by chance you ever know about the old licensed Car Wars, the tabletop game, Death Race 2000, Road Warrior, things like that. Well, what was the deal? I know we've talked about this before, but in Twisted Metal, which was one of the breakout PS1 games back in the day, it was all cars driving around in a, what was this, like some kind of like, was it like the Bread and Circuses of like a kind of messed up near future?
I think that's right.
Yeah, but there were like various like locales that had themes and stuff like that. I don't remember a ton of it. And you would choose your driver and everybody wanted to be Sweet Tooth, the crazy ice cream man.
The ice cream truck, yes. Right. So we get a glimpse of this teaser.
But this we get
Anthony Mackie. If you guys have seen Anthony Mackie in anything other than his Captain America roles, he is kind of a swaggery jerk.
Yeah.
That's kind of his vibe.
It is.
And this is what he's doing here. He's like, in an entertaining way, he talks directly to the audience. He's like, buckle your seatbelts. And then he puts a CD in, because it's from the 90s.
Yeah.
Like it's the 90s. And the CD starts playing Steal My Sunshine.
Right.
And then he's like dancing along to it while the car fires machine guns.
Yep. It's pretty goofy, but fun-looking. We know it's from the Cobra Kai people.
So the Cobra Kai people.
Also, I will say that the rest of the cast is Will Arnett, Nev Campbell, Stephanie Beatriz, Thomas Hayden Church.
Mm-hmm. Nev Campbell, a.k.a. Cindy Prescott.
As Cindy Prescott, yes.
This is either going to be a lot of fun or the stupidest thing anybody makes this year.
I don't know that has to be a binary. I think it could be... passable.
I'm playing Sweet Tooth as somebody named Samoa Joe, which I assume is a wrestler.
Probably.
That sounds like the right guy for it.
Yeah. I think it's either going to be stupid fun or stupid.
Yeah. because it's the Cobra Kai guys, I want to root for it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Even though, am I correct, none of us here are like particular Twisted Metal fans?
No, I've played it a handful of times.
I played it a lot.
Oh, did you?
But
okay,
back in
the
day.
But you liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. Right.
But probably like most people, you were like, this. You probably never thought this is going to become a TV series.
No, there was nothing there. There was just shooting. and right. driving around.
It does not have a plot, so they are going to... That on one level
in the same
means
level,
it's a weird choice to even use, yep. but on another level means that they kind of have pretty open...
They can build
But in the same
want.
Way that I played yeah. Gran Turismo and I never thought that would be a movie either, because that would be fucking boring.
Yeah. And yet here we are, the year of our Lord 2023.
Yep. And then they also did a title reveal for Godzilla X Kong New Empire.
Which Davis yep. told me that there's an even bigger,
bigger monkey.
Kong...
Right, I'm not 100% sure about this. I want to go ahead and
well, now,
my plausible deniability, but I think I read that somewhere that there's like some other shot somewhere, and it's a monkey that towers over King Kong and Godzilla, like way bigger than Godzilla, I think. And I'm going to guess that this is like the original ruler of whatever. What's the
Skull
underground
Island.
Hollow Earth?
Oh yeah, that thing, the Hollow Earth,
the New Empire.
Because last we saw, Kong did become king of that place.
Well, he sat on a throne.
He sat on a throne. But I think this other gianter monkey is going to come out and pinch his ass down.
Was he just in the bathroom?
Maybe.
He's like,
imagine
what
he's
going to
come out like John Travolta in Pulp Fiction. The toast will pop.
Yep.
and then, like, fucking King Kong is on his throne.
Yeah.
Man. Like,
with a Mac-10 silenced yeah. auto pistol.
I like these movies. I they're not good. I take that back. They kind of swell between good and not good. Because
there's good
Kong
parts.
Kong of Skull
parts.
Island is a lot of fun.
Kong of Skull Island is a lot of fun. It is not a good movie.
But like,
oh,
what was the
know.
One that had
it's
Godzilla?
Better.
I mean, the Godzilla Kong one, previous one,
was fun.
Yeah.
But like, whenever there would be plot stuff happening, or like humans
oh,
were talking,
they built some kind of weird device to go into the Hollow Earth, and I'm like, what are we doing?
Yep. Yeah. And it had what's her name from Stranger Things, but
yep.
she was just kind
She's
of
been
doing
in the beginning.
Very yeah. average dialogue. It's
yeah.
not
yep.
her fault. Just,
nope.
just giving
yeah.
it very average dialogue.
These movies are never. The thing is,
if they
I
made
want
these
them to be better because the whole idea of Monarch and all this kind of stuff I've really liked. They've had good people in it. Kong Skull Island is the closest they've gotten to grabbing my interest.
And Randy, I think we would also say you and I at least, but I think Nick too. But like Pacific Rim, which is not part of that series,
yeah.
but Pacific Rim was pretty good because that also had fun scenes
yeah.
throughout.
Yeah.
Like. Like, I know that was also a dumb movie, don't get me wrong. But I feel like its dialogue had more pep
yep.
Than, say, your average Godzilla
well, because
Kong
Del Toro
movie.
is just a better filmmaker than a lot of the other people
yeah,
who tried
and it was,
this.
It was really vibing off of anime weirdness
yeah.
and stuff like that, too.
Yep.
Anyway,
I will see this because I like.
I never see these ones in theaters.
Me neither.
It
I
is
like
a
all of them on HBO.
Yeah,
I like them on the big screen.
Do you?
Yeah, they're fun. Yeah,
sure. They're...
Is there? Have you seen all of them?
I didn't see the Congress Skull because that was during the pandemic and no one was going to the theater.
Right. I went.
You saw this in the pandemic. You saw the big screen.
I saw Kong of Skull Island, but it was
the...
before the pandemic.
Yeah,
no,
Godzilla versus Kong was during the
oh.
pandemic.
Because that one was...
Oh,
the,
no, I didn't see
that
that
was released directly to HBO. I was like, Dave snuck out to a theater somehow.
I turned the crank on the old-time projector.
To see a movie he didn't want to see.
I watched it on Super 8.
But prior to that, yes, I saw
Kong Skull Island at the Dollar Theater, which is now gone, a victim of the pandemic sales loss,
I think. I've seen every other one in theaters. So.
I saw the Bryan Cranston Godzilla in the theater as my next chance. After the last one I saw in the theater was the Matthew Broderick one.
Ouch.
And I was like, I'm going to give you one more chance. That chance was the Bryan Cranston Godzilla. No more chances for me.
They oopsied there.
I will not see any more of those.
I walked
in the
out of the 90s Godzilla Matthew Broderick
one. Smart call. I stayed the whole time.
Well, let me tell you, by the way, Kong of Skull Island is like the best dollar movie you're ever going to see.
Oh, I bet that, yeah.
It is top-notch dollar movie fodder.
Soundtrack alone.
Very fun movie.
Yeah.
You get Evil
it's
Sam
just,
Jackson.
It's just mean.
Yep.
And it's got John C. Reilly.
Yep.
They need more of that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So I probably won't see this in theaters, but I probably will watch it.
Nick, you go scout it out for us.
Yeah. You guys don't trust me.
It's like the scene in the, Daffy Duck Bugs Bunny things when he's like, they tell Daffy Duck to go see if Elmer Fudd's still up above
still
in the hole.
About.
Yeah, we need you to go see if Elmer Fudd's still lurking about.
And then Halle Berry versus Angelina Jolie are going to be in an action flick called Maud versus Maud, which they're calling Bond versus Bourne.
Which I think is a cool premise.
So this is not a trailer that we saw. This is
no.
a movie that's
nope.
just upcoming.
Nope.
So Angelina Jolie will play the Bondian
I would assume so. She's British.
And Bourne will be... quick
Berry.
Summarize what Bourne is, because I've watched
well,
those movies,
but
I forget.
Let me read you the log line here.
Okay.
pit Barry and Julie against each other, one perhaps playing a suave, well-resourced spy, while the other person is a less refined, street-level assassin.
Yeah.
Okay. I know you love assassins.
You know, there's just enough of a tweak to it in this one that if people told me it was good, I'd consider it.
Yeah, I'd consider it.
The Bourne movies are good.
But remind me, who's it? Angelina Jolie and who?
Halle Berry.
Okay.
Halle Berry, maybe. Of course, you know, she was in...
John Wick 3.
John Wick 3. Yep. Before that, she was in one of the Bond movies as Jinx. She almost,
yep.
Got a spinoff.
What are you talking about? I don't remember that Bond movie.
Oh, well, there was an invisible car and an ice powder.
Yeah.
I would say the worst Bond movie.
It's terrible.
It's the only... The contenders would include, like... oh, gosh. What's the one? It was, like, one of the late Roger Moore ones with Max Zorin or whatever.
Yeah.
View to a Kill.
That's
pretty bad.
But also...
She was also in
Operation, or codename Swordfish, with Hugh Jackman.
And John Travolta.
John Travolta, not Hugh Jackman.
No, Hugh Jackman was in there.
Okay. John Travolta was the bad guy, Hugh Jackman the good guy.
Yeah, sure.
I've never seen it.
John Travolta was definitely in his Broken Arrow mode.
I have seen clips online of Halle Berry.
Played Tomb Raider, Salt. Her name was Salt.
It was.
And she was Miss... Was she really? That was her name? I thought it was a movie just called.
No, it was her last name.
And then she was Mr. and Mrs. Smith and was in Wanted, which I'd forgotten
exactly. So, none of these are what I call great movies to me.
Salt is underrated.
Salt might be underrated. And yet.
It's a good movie. I don't know what to tell you.
I've never seen it, so I don't know.
But perhaps they can make magic together. I don't know.
Perhaps. All right. That is our news. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and I'm going to yammer on you guys about board games. All right, I just returned from Reno, Nevada, where they held the latest GAMMA, which is the Game Manufacturers Association, which is a lot of people who make board games, role-playing games, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
There's a retail membership, and so once a year we go to the thing. And they give us.
You learn the secrets of the games to come.
I learn the secrets of the games to come. Yes, I am. It's like the Stonecutters of the Simpsons. We all wear robes.
Yep. You're like a seer who has peered into the future of board games.
I am.
And you know its dark secrets.
Yes, you're overselling this by a lot.
All right, but it sounded pretty cool. I saw like you sent us back a lot of photos, and it's like, oh, these are some dope ass games. There's the new Disney card game that's coming up that everybody's talking about.
Yep.
And all these, lots and lots of board games and other stuff. So what do we
before,
got?
Before I roll into GAMMA, I want to talk real quick about a couple games I played before I left for GAMMA.
Yeah.
I got a chance to play that Splendor Duel, which is the two-player version of Splendor. It's really good. Splendor's a great game. It's a game where you're playing like gem merchants, and you're using these little heavy plastic chips.
Yep.
And you're trying to go to certain points.
It's one of those very approachable and very fun to play games.
Yeah.
Real quick to pick up.
Just like Carcassonne, it's one of these where the theme sounds like you're like, wait, I'm a gem merchant.
Right.
But it's a really fun game, very, very replayable.
Yeah, sometimes you're just like, just trust me, it's good.
The dual version is a two-player version, and the chips are about half the size, but the same quality of like solid plastic. And you have a board that is all the stuff, and you can sort of take three chips in a row. You can do either diagonal or across, and that's how you like pick your chips. And you're trying to use it to buy, you know, rings and all this kind of stuff. And when it's empty, you can take part at the beginning of your turn, you can actually refill the board. But if you do that, your opponent gets an advantage. So you're trying to, like, push your luck to take what's available and not refill the board and be the last one to refill it.
Oh, okay.
A couple little tweaks. It's a really good two-player game.
I've been surprised to see games that have relatively sophisticated mechanics and that get... When they do the two-player version of it, this scaled-up version,
yep.
Like, a lot of times they're really smart about how they do that.
So this is akin to, like, Seven Wonders Duel,
yeah.
Kind of,
yeah.
In those...
It's in that same vein, same people. I mean, like, yeah. Seven Wonders Duel, Blender Duel, same creators, but...
I don't know if you were going to bring it up, Randy, but did you also do the DC Deck Building two-player?
Yes, I was going to mention, DC Deck Building is a deck builder that we all really like. It's one of the early deck players we played. It has been out of print for a while now. They did a big Kickstarter, one of the biggest Kickstarters, and that stuff's all gone out. As a result, all that's back in print. So the new stuff hasn't hit us yet. There's a Injustice set coming out, which I have played, which is really good. That'll be hitting us later this year.
But we did get the main game back.
But we got the main game back in. So yeah, if you have not played it, we also have the Rivals, which is the two-player version. There's two of those so far. There's the Batman Joker and a Green Lantern Sinestro.
I found the DC deck building game to be...
I think, at least to me, superior to Legendary, which was Marvel's deck building game.
I
felt like the mechanics were really finely tuned, and it captured kind of the vibe of everything.
Yeah, it says right out of Poppy Superhero Phil. The interesting thing is, like, according to Board Game Geek, Legendary is the higher one because it's like sort of a deeper vibe.
Yeah.
But I think there's something just about like, oh, in Legendary you are S.H.I.E.L.D. agents recruiting heroes. Mm-hmm. In DC deck building, you're the hero.
Yep.
Even though it's a pretty abstract game and you could be playing Superman and you've got like the Teen Titans base set up to defend you and you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Don't think about it too hard.
It's very crowd pleasing though.
But it's like, if you're like, cool man, I got the Teen Titans base. Oh, cool. I'm going to fight Gorilla Grodd. Like, it is very fun. And those two-player ones, I've played the Batman one. Did you play the GL one or the Batman Joker?
I actually played the newest one, the Flash Reverse Flash.
Oh, okay.
Which is not...
They're pretty clever how they do it.
Yeah.
With differing versions of the characters that you can kind of, like, upgrade to, I think, mm-hmm. if memory serves. But anyway, yeah, just another case of like, oh, they did a pretty smart, small player, you know, two-player version of this.
Yeah. All right, Gamma stuff. I went to a few presentations from different people, and I sort of run down a little bit. Lucky Duck, the people who make Flamecraft, it's not their game that they did distribute that one. But they have some of their big games coming out this next year. The one that I got a chance to play a little bit of is called Cosmoctopus.
Okay.
You are cultists trying to summon a great evil octopus from the beyond.
Sounds vaguely Lovecraftian.
It is vaguely Lovecraftian, not even vaguely. And you're doing sort of card drafting to try to get like books and knowledge and that kind of thing. And when you succeed, you get little plastic tentacles. And if you summon 8 tentacles, you're the one who summons.
So this is a game where you're actually playing a cultist.
Yes.
Interesting.
You're trying to summon the Cosmoctopus. The notable thing about it is it's an engine building game. It's a really fun game. The notable thing is it's designed by the guys who did Parks.
Okay.
Wow. Which is one of our favorite games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd it look?
It looks great. I mean, Lucky Duck has great components.
Yeah.
Later in the year, they will have a game called Senjutsu, which is a Japanese combat, you know, sort of samurai kind of thing. And it's similar to Unmatched, the game that we all like. That's the card-based combat, except that you can customize your decks. Oh. Whereas on Unmatched, you get a deck of cards for each character, and that's what you get. In Senjutsu, you can sort of customize your deck a little bit.
So it's blending a little Magic the Gathering kind of.
A little bit, yeah. So that's sort of their. There's other stuff they've got coming, but those are the two big ones I noticed. The OP, the guys who do USAopoly, they do all the various flavored Monopolies. They've been doing a lot more games lately. They're the ones who do Marvel Dice Throne.
Yeah, they've got a huge line of
stuff. They've got a bunch of stuff. So they have a couple big games coming. One of the things that we're getting from them soon is called Tapple. Have you heard of this?
Mm-mm.
It is a big party game. Apparently it's big on TikTok.
Okay.
It's a little wheel that's got, I don't know, 22, 24 of the letters of the English alphabet in it. And then cards. And the cards have things like, for example, animals or types of food or whatever. And it has a little button in the middle. It's got a timer, maybe like 15 seconds. It's a little music. And you sit around a table. Someone flips the card. And then you have to name an animal or whatever that starts with those letters. So you push down the letter A and it clicks into place. And now no one can use A for the right round. And then you push the thing in the middle and the timer starts against the next person.
Hmm.
So it's like a timed real-time game. And the turn ends when either someone doesn't get in time, at which point the last person gets the card. Or, if you somehow get through, which has happened to the group we played a couple times, if you get through all the letters, you put another card down, and now you get to name two things. It was super fun, and there's a quick play version called Tapple 10 that's coming up. It's just like almost like the Spot It games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit circular coaster. But basically, it's a color and then a name, and you like it comes down, and it'll be like, you look at the black category, and the category is name a movie starts with K, and the first person to get it gets the coaster. So it's like really quick, and you have to like put your hand on the coaster and grab it.
So this is kind of energetic party game.
Yeah,
that sounds fun. Yeah.
Very fun. We're going to be getting a demo of Tapple, and I will definitely demo it for people. We got they've got a game coming out in late summer, maybe July, that they call Pandemic Meets Ticket to Ride, called Express Route. I played that. It's a lot of fun. You have a map of the U.S. Packages are coming in, and you have to deliver them using either trucks or planes that you can upgrade. And you have a...
So it's cooperative?
It's cooperative. It's very challenging.
Where does the pandemic thing come into it?
Because, I mean, it's co-op. Uh-huh. But the packages are flowing, and if you don't, you will run out. If you don't deliver packages, they keep going into your queue. You will run out of time, and you'll end the game.
Uh-huh. Out of curiosity, is it one of those things where it's like, you know, like in Pandemic, there was like the transportation specialist, the doctor, and stuff like that.
We did not. I played the demo, so we did not play with the roles.
Okay,
but the roles, they make it easier because I was like, this is super hard. And he's like, oh yeah, the roles make it easier.
Is there somebody who's like, he's the driver, the sorter?
There's a logistics specialist. There's somebody who plans out routes and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And they also have one called Art Project, which is a cooperative art thief game.
Yep.
From the designer of Welcome To, that Roland Wright. They also
is that
have
the one that I played?
I think you played Welcome To.
That was the one like sort of city building and streets and stuff like that. That was way fun.
This is an art thief one?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
I think you're trying to catch art thieves.
Oh, okay, not be an art thief.
I want to be an art thief.
It's a flip.
I wanted a Thomas Crown Fair.
Yeah. They have themed Munchkin, so South Park and Scooby-Doo Munchkin. They have a Dr. Seuss Scrabble.
Sure.
They're doing, you guys know the game Taboo?
Yeah.
They're doing a Disney-themed Taboo.
Okay.
Which seems odd.
Remind me real quick, I played it, but it's been so long, you can't say a word.
Things, yeah. And then they are doing, these are the same people who did the Trivial Pursuit Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
They're doing an Infinity Saga. So it's like the 22 movies of Marvel.
As a Trivial Pursuit?
As a Trivial Pursuit.
I mean, that's something we should get.
Oh, we should absolutely get. Yeah.
Marvel people know those movies pretty well.
And then we should have a tournament to determine who knows the MCU.
I've heard the D&D one was pretty challenging. I wonder what kind of weird stuff is in the Marvel ones.
Yep. We've got we talked a lot about Foam Brain Dice. We carry all they showed us all their blind bag dice for the rest of the year.
Okay,
there's some cool sets coming on that. They're also going to make some charms because they do pins and that kind of thing.
I think having little charm bracelet, gamer nerd stuff.
We've branched out to having like the earrings and stuff done really really well for us. So
I'm also we should be getting soon, maybe next month. Custom of those click together dice trays.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna get some with our logo on them.
That's cool.
Which is pretty cool. I also got new dice from a company called Gatekeeper Games and Dice. Not the best name. Has unfortunate connotations, but they one of their big claims to fame is they we've had them before. They used to be Halfsies dice.
Oh, okay.
They have that castle design that stacks.
Yeah.
So there's their dice. One of the things their case design is that it's hinged, so you don't lose the bottom.
Oh, okay.
And it's designed like a little castle, so you can actually put dice on top of it if you want to. And also, they are strong enough you can stand on one of them.
I don't know if I believe that.
I saw him do it.
You saw him do it on a reinforced one.
Well, we can test them when we get them.
Oh, yeah. Splinters. It's going to happen.
But anyway, they've got a ton of different dice to do. We got one of their blind bags.
Yeah, I just popped one open.
And it's kind of a Doctor Who looking. It's got silver and blue. Yeah, they do blended colors, two
and
three blended
Time Lord
colors.
Blue and Doctor White.
They have a ton of different dice. They've got some glow-in-the-dark ones. They've got some that have meeples inside of them. We're going to be getting a lot of their dice. They also do 11 dice sets. So in addition to the regular, you get two extra D6 and extra D20.
Okay. Oh,
that advantage, disadvantage, and, you know,
I was wondering why more dice companies don't do that, because that is becoming more and more of a thing.
Those guys
especially.
Who used to do that, but I don't think those guys are in business anymore.
No.
They also do epic dice, which are bigger, and tiny dice, which are smaller.
Are we getting epic dice?
Yep.
Okay.
They also have a set of magnetic dice that are like rare earth magnets that you can use. He said, you can put your character sheet on the fridge with these magnets if you'd like to. He said, also, if you get a metal table, you will always roll the highest number on the dice. Which is kind of funny. They have a set of DM helper dice that it's like a different... It comes in a little package, and it's got like NPC, not alignments, but their disposition towards you. Like you roll to see what they're... location and damage thing.
So a little sort of like luck dice in a lot of ways.
You know, or location dice. Stuff to sort of like give you little DM hints and that kind of
thing. That's actually kind of cool.
Which is kind of neat. A bunch of stuff from them. They also have mystery dice. We've been doing well with mystery dice. Mm-hmm. They have some where you could get any given set they do. So we'll have a big variety of dice coming next few weeks. Saw the guys who do Frosthaven. Which notable Frosthaven is coming back to us soon.
Yep.
They also do a metal coins that is direct only that we're getting from them. So if you're playing Gloomhaven, you can get a set of metal coins for it.
Oh, specifically for the game.
Yep. They also announced they're doing a Miniatures of Gloomhaven Kickstarter starting in June, which gives you, you can do miniatures to replace all the minis in the game, or which are usually little standees. Hmm. And the minis look really nice.
I bet.
But to support that, they're doing a Gloomhaven RPG that uses the board game system of cards and all that kind of thing to basically you can play and or you can play role playing games in that world using that system.
Okay. I played enough of Gloomhaven before the pandemic came and knocked everything into a disarray. To see that it is a kind of cool dark fantasy world.
Yeah.
Unusual races and classes. I think I played a little Ratman guy
who
had a like gunpowder weapons and stuff like that, and so it was like some kind of gunslinger. Anyway, it seems like it could be a good setting.
Speaking of RPGs, Paizo had a big thing. They talked about the stuff coming up for Starfinder, which includes all the adventure paths are going to go to hardcover only. They're only going to do a couple a year. There's something called Ports of Call, which is a bunch of different locations, including... y'all remember in Starfinder, there's the Galarian, like the world of Pathfinder disappeared?
Right, it's a big mystery.
Well, there is a... One of the worlds is Galarian World. It is a theme park based on old Galarian. So it's like a sci-fi theme park. There's a big guy in a goblin suit.
That's fun.
Which looks like a ton of fun.
You know, I always felt like Paizo kind of... you've probably heard me use this analogy before, Randy, but you know where EverQuest was kind of the slightly stodgy MMO, and then along comes World of Warcraft with lots of slightly goofy but also
fun,
good lore, but also fun stuff, silly stuff. I feel like Paizo is a little bit better about that from their weird, like, that's, you know, D&D is the stodgy one. Paizo has goofy goblins. They've got a built-in lore where there's, like, sci-fi stuff, right?
There's the Barrier Peaks. There's a Western area.
There's steampunkish type stuff, and an adventure where you fight time-traveling Rasputin.
Right.
Like, I'm like, these guys are lit. I don't know.
They ran down, before they get to their refresh, which is coming later in the year, they're doing a book called High Helm, which is about the dwarves, and an adventure path. It's a dwarven adventure path, very focused on that. They're going to reprint the Harrow deck, which is kind of their big tarot deck kind of thing.
Yep.
But it's in tarot deck size, and I saw this. It comes in a box with a magnetic enclosure. All the cards have, like, foil on them. They're beautiful art. Yeah. Like, it is a really pretty-looking thing for people who like tarot decks, but also if you're playing Pathfinder.
Well, Randy, you were talking about how good the art is.
Yeah.
Wayne Reynolds has kind of been their, I guess, their kind of art director from the beginning.
Yeah.
He worked on both D&D, what, 4th edition?
Yes,
way
I
back
think 4th
when?
Edition, yeah.
But, like, really kind of, like, was, like, the overseer of all things Pathfinder. Still does a lot of their covers. They're really great. It's, like, really detailed, big heroic, you know, kind of characters. But also, they have a lot of character to them. And I think you said there was a lot of good stuff from him.
Yep. And then the other thing I talked about was the Orc license, which is going to be Pathfinder going forward. It's going to be, they're getting rid of the OGL.
Right. Why do they, what, does Orc stand for something?
Original role-playing content or something like that.
Okay.
But they are going to be reprinting the core books for Pathfinder and rearranging them. Now, they were very, very, very much said, the core, if you get the second edition reprint, which should be coming in any day now, that game is still second edition Pathfinder. Like, they're not doing... This is not 2.5 or third edition Pathfinder. But what they're doing is decoupling a lot of the D&D-specific stuff from it. So, for example, they're going to get rid of Rust Monsters. They're going to get rid of Atyugs, the things that are specifically D&D, and replace them with different monsters that fill those roles.
Yeah. Knowing their general level of creativity, I'm looking forward to seeing what weird monsters they come up with to kind of replace the iconics.
Basically, what they're going to do is they're going to stop looking at everything that we've been doing traditionally over, like, 40 years of RPGs and look at fresh, sort of, like, what works for us? What is Pathfinder stuff?
Right. And you know what it sounded to me like, weirdly, Randy? This is a comic comparison, but the way the Ultimate line, when it began, Ultimate Spider-Man and all that,
something like that,
it was designed to, like, not assume that all the lore built up about Spider-Man had to be known. Let's find the stuff that works, the stuff that doesn't, change it if it needs to.
So they're doing four new core books.
Kill it if you have to.
Player core, then Game Master core, which they're separating out player and Game Master stuff for the first time ever.
I actually think that's not a bad idea. If only for size reasons.
Yeah, there was no way. Basically, they said, look, if we did a all-in-one book, it was going to have to be like $80 or $90. Like, printing costs have gone up. It would have been huge. Their books are like 400-some pages.
Yeah. But you also pointed out that by paring down the player's handbook a little bit, it becomes really the only thing players need to have.
Right.
Whereas they were kind of getting a little GM stuff that really wasn't germane to
Yeah, if you just want to play, you just can buy Player Core and you're good. The Player Core, interesting, they're changing the core races a little bit, like what's available. So, like, in Player Core, which comes out in November, there are going to be ancestries that are replacing races, their ancestries. Right. Including Leshy, which is like their plant race.
Okay.
It's a big thing.
Sounded cool because, by the way, I am sure that Wayne Reynolds has an amazing painting of one of those guys that's going to win me over.
The art and all these presentations are amazing art. They showed a lot of clips of art. Orc and Nephilim. The Nephilim is what they're calling...
Tiefling types?
Tiefling types and Asimar and all those guys. Anyone with a plane touch.
Yeah.
They're going to have... In the base class, they're going to be Bard, Cleric, Druid... Fighter, Ranger, Rogue, Witch, and Wizard. Those are the base classes of Pathfinder. And everything will be in there. So, like, when they do all the fighter feats and all that stuff, they're going to move all that into one. So if you want to play a fighter, you just have to play Player Core.
Yep.
You want to buy Player Core 2 because there's nothing for fighters in there. It is just for other classes.
You were telling me a lot of the details from this, Randy, and I was like, on all of them, I was like, oh, that makes sense. Yep. Oh, I wouldn't have thought about that. That's pretty cool.
There's a lot of, like, clearly they're thinking things through. The GM Core is going to have systems for chases and duels and research. All the magic items, all the lore. The monster core is going to be big revisions to dragons and outsiders. Their dragons, interestingly, they're not going to have red, green. Like, they're getting rid of all that. And instead, the dragons will come from their four sources of magic. So we have arcane dragons, primal dragons, divine dragons. And they gave a couple examples. One was a mirage dragon, and one was a diabolic dragon.
Okay.
And they showed some of the art, and it's fantastic. It's not Wayne Reynolds. It's another guy who does the designs.
Yeah.
And then Wayne Reynolds draws them based on that.
Oh, interesting.
But they're fantastic.
Right. They still want to have memorable, colorful dragons, some of which are helpful, some of which are bad guys. But they're changing up the assumptions.
And this comes out in March. So there will be like 6 months where you'll have to use the old monster stuff, which is why everything's compatible. Like, you have the bestiaries, you still got all the classic stuff. And then Player Core 2 comes out in July, and it has a lot some of the weirder races, Catfolk, Gnoll, Tengu.
But those are good. That's a good batch, though.
The secondary core stuff is Alchemist, Barbarian, Champion, which is their Paladin, Investigator, Monk, Oracle, Sorcerer, and Swashbuckler. Which I think is interesting is that Barbarian, Monk, and Sorcerer are now not core classes. They are secondary core.
Hmm. That sort of makes sense to me. I was telling Randy off mic the other day, Nick, that, like, Paladins, I think, like, although I love classic knights in armor, I feel like they increasingly feel out of step with kind of what most groups are like.
Yeah.
The cliche, at least, of the paladin. Randy, you're running a paladin who's very different in our current D&D game.
But
the classic paladin. King Arthur knight is a little too, kind of goody-goody, a little too my way or the highway.
You can make it work, but it takes a little work.
Right. And likewise, you know, like, I mean, that was a good list of classes, but it does feel like most of those classes could be in the second thing.
Yeah. And just a couple notes on sort of the stuff they mentioned as far as the tweaks. The big drops. Ability scores. There will no longer be... They're dropping the 3 to 18. So basically, if you have a strength, your strength is a plus 3 or a plus 4 or a minus 1. He was like, the notion of the...
Well, the idea is that, like, those are the only numbers you ever actually look at in the game.
You don't actually need those other numbers. They are just to generate that plus 1 to 4.
Yeah.
I'm like,
so when a new player, when a new player comes in, they don't have to learn the arcane thing that, like, a 13 is good but not great on, you know, to have as a number. It's like... But they will understand plus 1 is good, plus 4 is best, you know, that kind of thing.
They didn't say this, but I would assume they're going to go back to the 4th edition idea of spell levels being the level of your character.
That would be a similar, really good
idea. That'd be
idea.
A really good idea. I don't know if they
I
will.
I have always hated...
That was not mentioned.
...the complicated spell levels.
But that was a dumb thing.
By the way, Nick, way back when, I don't know, we played Dungeon World just a few games worth once upon a time.
Yeah, I remember.
Dungeon World, I believe, was the first time I saw... Because it sort of had characteristics like that, too. I believe they did the bonus points only, too. The plus 2, plus 1, minus 1.
It makes sense.
Yeah. And it's weird to think of because you're like, oh, we're so used to it. But you never actually need those full numbers. You only care about the modifiers that they generate.
The other sort of notable thing is they're dropping the 9-grid alignment. So you will have, you know, it can be holy or unholy or chaos or law and that kind of thing. But lawful good, chaotic good, all that stuff, they're dropping all of that out.
Okay.
Which makes sense, too.
Now you're goblin chummy.
Basically, Pathfinder is going to become a little bit of its own thing.
Yeah.
And drop a little bit of the D&D stuff, but it will still be Pathfinder.
And I'm pretty excited about what they're presenting. It seems like it's just like a refresh for a game that can really stand on its own. Doesn't need to stand on the bones of D&D 3.5.
And it's a pretty serious refresh.
Yeah. The last thing I was going to mention is Lorcana, which is the new Disney CCG.
Yep.
It was so swamped I couldn't get to play it at the game nights. They cycled through 50 people in one night, and I still didn't get a chance to play it. But it has all original art. It is all a bunch of the Disney characters. There are three different starters that come with two characters each.
Yep.
You get two rares and a foil in every booster. And there's three different levels of rarity.
It is like Magic-esque battling, right?
Yes. So the big thing is you can use your... you are Imagineers using magical ink to summon these characters.
Okay.
And the way you get ink is you can... most of your cards... there are some cards you can't, but most of your cards, you can spend them to get an ink point. And then you use the ink points to summon the characters.
Okay.
So basically you can choose to use a card as its card or as an ink.
Okay.
And then when you summon the cards, you can summon different levels of the characters, and they each have things they do.
Hmm.
And when you use their ability, that's when they become vulnerable to attacks. And people can challenge the other characters.
Okay.
And when you use their abilities, that's how you get lore points. The first person with 20 lore points wins. So you're not directly attacking. Like, nobody has health. You're not attacking anybody. You are trying to build up lore.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Nick and I were, while you were away, bumping our numbers on that, since we know it's likely to be allocated.
Yes.
And we were looking at it, and I was like, okay, there's three sort of starter decks, and each one has, like, two characters on it. And we were looking, and, like, the characters are all really good choices. Their characters, every one of them is going to be somebody people want. And the same also went for even just the sort of the side stuff we were getting, like the sleeves and the mats. It's like, will people want sleeves that have Scar on them? Yes. Will people want sleeves with Mickey on them? Yeah. Yes.
And it's all original.
There's no, like, weird morts in there.
And it's new artwork, too. It's, like, new art of Scar, right? New art of Mickey. And
yeah,
the presenter, one of the two co-designers, talked. The guy who designed it worked on a ton of card games. Like,
I lobbied for the Rescuers pedigree. Down Under, and they said maybe on the seventh set.
They talked about it. These are all, like, gamers. These are all Disney fans. It's definitely not a cash grab kind of thing. It is clearly these guys really wanted to make this. So I think it's going to be a big thing, and we'll see that coming out. I think we get as stores, we get a 2-week jump on everybody else. So we'll have it 2 weeks early.
We've started taking some pre-orders. We're a little tentative about it because we don't know yet what's going to potentially be allocated.
We've ordered bigger than we order on Magic.
Yeah.
And it just depends on what we get allocated now.
Right.
To.
But if people want to, within reason, we're taking special orders.
Yeah, we can try to take a special order for it. That's about it. We've got a bunch of stuff we'll be posting on Facebook as new stuff comes in. I ordered from a few different vendors. I always discover a new vendor when I go to Gamma. We'll definitely be expanding our dice section, which is already pretty huge. Oh, and the one other bit of news that came out a little bit before Gamma was the WizKids news, which we haven't talked about.
Right.
There's been a lot of complaints. We've been complaining about our customers have talked about that the WizKids minis have been a little hard to come by lately.
Yep, right.
A lot of them have been out of print. They are going back to print on almost everything, and they're going with a new... Basically, what they're going to try, they're like, we're going to stop doing these giant new waves. The new waves are going to have maybe 5 or 10 new minis in them.
Yeah.
And instead, we're going to focus on making sure that there's always owlbears, that there's always, beholders, that there's always... the mimics. There's always these characters and these monsters. And I think that's a much smarter thing to do.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're always wanting to have is all that stuff in print. I also did talk to WizKids and to Pathfinder people and was like, hey, can we please get some unusual races and class combos? Because we've got plenty of human fighters and wizards. We need just like one rat folk druid or something.
Right.
Right.
And so I did get that.
We lobbied on behalf of that.
We lobbied on behalf of that. So
yeah, if you're looking for a Tabaxi or an Aarakocra or more options for any of the other races, we're trying to get that out there.
It's not coming soon, but hopefully the message has been heard. He did say they'd heard it before. They've heard commentary.
And you scared him a little, right?
I did. I pulled a knife.
You're like, I'm not going to cut you right now, but
I'm not going to cut you, but I want you to know that I can.
I'm around.
Yeah.
And I know where you live.
Yeah. And I am a rogue, so I would do sneak attack damage.
That's right.
All right, I think that wraps it up for us this time. We'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas.
You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.